Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Well, no one could have predicted last night's election results even just a couple of days ago. Joe Biden won big in 9 states, making him the clear front runner. Bernie Sanders has a sizable lead here in California, which allocates 30% of all delegates. He could still close the delegate gap as California's results continue to come in. After spending an unprecedented $660 million on his campaign, former Republican and New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has dropped out and endorsed Joe Biden. After failing to win a single state, and coming in third in her home state of Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren is still in the race. The other big story of the night was unacceptable long lines. In California and Texas, people stood in line for more than 3 hours in some places. There was a video of one man in Texas who stood in line for 5 hours. Since the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, 750 polling places have shut down in Texas. 50 counties that gained the most Black and Latino residents between 2012 and 2018 closed a whopping 542 polling sites. And we'll talk about that a little later in the show. But joining us to talk about what happened last night is Paul Blumenthal, senior reporter with HuffPost, where he covers campaign finance and elections. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, great to have you. Let's first just talk about the major changes that we saw over the past couple of days. There's a pretty good piece in Politico by Ryan Lizza who talks about Biden's miraculous turnaround, and he says it comes about for a couple reasons. So let's first talk about what happened in South Carolina. Representative Clyburn came out at the last minute for Joe Biden, and he won really big there. In fact, he really swept South Carolina, which has a significant Black population. So let's first talk about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was the big win that Joe Biden was, waiting to have happen, and it actually came through in South Carolina. It seems that, you know, there are a lot of Democratic voters out there who've been a bit confused as to who they're supposed to support in this race. They might like a lot of the candidates, but they don't particularly love any one of them. And then, you know, there's the people who support Bernie Sanders, and there are a lot more Democrats who maybe didn't want to vote for him, and they were looking for a cue, and they seem to have gotten that in what happened in South Carolina with a nearly 30-point win by Biden, fueled by, Representative Clyburn's last-minute endorsement.
And I want to be clear, because tensions are high and there were a lot of fights on social media last night. We also got an email from a listener who said, you know, I voted for Biden. I am not a corporate tool, because we talked about the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. So this is not to say that we're saying that anybody is making people vote for a particular candidate. I mean, people have a lot of different reasons about why they vote. But what Lizza pointed out in this Politico piece is that the effect of powerful Democrats getting behind Biden was really powerful. Voters were divided on a lot of issues. They were divided about who could actually beat Trump. And once people coalesced behind Biden, a lot of people said, well, he's the guy to beat Trump, so let's vote for him. In fact, BuzzFeed had a piece about people who were going to vote for other candidates. But once people got behind Biden, they changed their vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that the one issue in this campaign is going to be Donald Trump. It won't be the economy. It won't be health care. It's just going to be Donald Trump. And a lot of the voters who came out to support Democrats in 2018 are the kind of suburban, moderate voters who are really, in a lot of ways, just simply disgusted by Donald Trump and his presidency and just want him gone. And that, you know, gives fuel for whomever can consolidate the support of voters and party elites to say that they are the candidate of, who is electable, who will beat Donald Trump in the election. And I believe that's what we are seeing happen with Joe Biden at the moment. Whether there are polls that show both him and Bernie Sanders doing equally well against Donald Trump, that that's a different story.
Politico also points out that after Joe Biden won in South Carolina, he got positive media coverage worth over $100 million. This was a game changer for Biden because a lot of people said his campaign was in big trouble. He wasn't raising a lot of money. So that media coverage really also was a game changer.
Yeah, I mean, something that we've learned from the 2016 election is that earned media, getting that kind of free media, getting talked about on cable news is, you know, huge for a campaign. It's maybe more important than the money you're spending. And it's something that Donald Trump absolutely dominated in 2016 and continues to dominate, controlling the news cycle, getting headlines, no matter if it's for a good or a bad thing. It creates more buzz, people talking about you. And Joe Biden had a problem with this. We saw Mike Bloomberg rose in the polls, getting a ton of earned media off of his advertising campaign, off of his social media advertising campaign, that sort of helped propel him before anybody actually got to see him speak on a debate stage. So, I mean, it's a huge deal, the earned media he got over the past 3 days, particularly on cable news channels that, you know, a lot of the older Democratic voters watch and are influenced by.
Right. And we've been talking about this for the last few weeks. After South Carolina and then after Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg and a number of other Democrats, Beto O'Rourke, coalesced behind Biden, the cable shows were like 95% Biden. They showed part of a Bernie rally. They showed an Elizabeth Warren rally getting ready, but they never went back to her. I mean, in the last couple of weeks, she's been completely erased by the cable shows.
Yeah, I mean, hasn't performed well in pretty much any of the election contests, so it's hard to blame them for not giving her as much attention. That's what happens, you know. Once you start winning, they start paying more attention to you. You get more airtime. It's just tends to be how it works. And you know, she was supposed to do well in Iowa, New Hampshire. You know, she wound up finishing third in her home state of Massachusetts, and now I guess her campaign manager has said that they're reassessing the campaign at the moment.
Right. Let's talk about the black voters in the South. We've been trying not to say the black vote on the show because it's just not a monolith. But the fact is, black voters in the South overwhelmingly voted for Joe Biden. And Bernie Sanders, according to Politico, did better with black voters in the South, but he really failed to improve his 2016 numbers. And some of the conversations I've heard this morning are, we really need to talk about this. Why hasn't Sanders made any headway when it comes to especially older black voters in the South? He did well with younger black voters, but not at all with older black voters.
I mean, I think that that's true, and he definitely tried more in this campaign to court those kind of voters in this election, but it doesn't look like he's going to win their votes. I mean, in past elections, black voters in the South have, you know, they largely want somebody who's going to win and, you know, a tried-and-true product who will be able to, run strong in the election because they know, what the opposition is and the dangers that opposition presents to their lives, maybe more than a lot of other voters do. They're looking for a safe bet, and somebody like Joe Biden might look like a safe bet right now rather than Bernie Sanders and a political revolution that they might not be looking for at the moment. It's like a lot of these other voters who are looking. They're looking for someone who they think can beat Donald Trump and who they know and that, you know, have a past relationship with.
Right. And then we did a little bit of, we've been talking a lot about the Latinx vote over the last couple of weeks. Yesterday, talking about the fact that they're just growing in size in places like California and Texas. We're still waiting for results in California. But what can you tell us about the Latinx vote, especially young Latinx voters?
I mean, it seems that Bernie Sanders is doing great with that vote, whether it's young, running even among older voters as well. Similarly with Asian voters in California and other states in Nevada. So it does seem like this is a constituency that Bernie Sanders' campaign really worked hard to appeal to and succeeded at. It's just unclear if it's enough to put him into the lead in enough states, it looks like they came close in Texas, but that's, one of the big states with a Latino voting bloc.
And USA Today has a piece about how the youth vote fell short once again. In Alabama, only 10% of voters were in the 17 to 29 range compared to 14% in 2016. Sanders won 6 out of 10 of those voters. North Carolina, 14% were young voters compared to 16%. 4 years ago, 57% went for Sanders. And in South Carolina, young voters made up just 11% of the electorate compared to 15% in 2016. So we're seeing the amount of young voters go down this time around.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked at any of the raw number counts, if this is due to, an increase percent in older voters coming out that is driving that percentage number down. But, I mean, it certainly is an issue for the Sanders campaign. The rationale of his campaign is we're going to have this big, booming youth turnout brought out by his message. And if you don't bring that turnout out in the primaries, people are going to question whether that would translate to a general election, which is his big electability argument.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that presents a problem for him arguing about the way that he believes he will win and defeat Donald Trump.
So at this point, according to The Guardian, you need 1,991 delegates to win the nomination. Right now, Joe Biden has 548. Bernie Sanders has 484. Elizabeth Warren has 53. And again, Mike Bloomberg has dropped out after spending an unprecedented $660 million on this campaign. And he said he's going to endorse Bernie Sanders. You wrote a piece about this, Paul, and you write that Bloomberg likely spent almost $14 million per delegate. This is a historic wipeout for the most expensive primary campaign ever. The question is, what now? Last night on CNN, Andrew Yang said that Michael Bloomberg actually has a digital game, a digital machine that is far superior to that of the DNC. And now that he's endorsed Biden, he's going to start an independent expenditure, which means he can spend endless amounts of money to not only beat Trump, but to also elect other Democrats. And the Money in Politics journalist that we've had on the show says this just sets yet another bad precedent for money in politics.
Well, I mean, certainly the Democratic Party message itself is that they want to get big money out of politics and overturn Citizens United. And here, you have one of the richest men in the world who's going to dedicate God knows how much of his own fortune. As you said, he spent $660 million to try to elect himself in just about 101 days. And that accounts for about 1% of his wealth, which he should make back on compound interest on his net worth within a couple months anyways. So he can spend $1 billion if he wants to help elect Joe Biden, or if somebody else happens to win the nomination, them as well, through a super PAC. And he was the biggest donor to Democratic super PACs in the 2018 campaign. So, I mean, I think we're going to see just, a lot of records broke. He already broke a giant record for how much money you could spend in a primary campaign. It didn't buy him a good candidacy or any charisma that could help him win, but it did buy him even more political influence than he already had. It bought him 15% in a lot of these states. It bought him a ticket to the debate stage. So, money can buy you a lot, and he will continue to have greater influence in the Democratic Party as he spends hundreds of millions more to help the Democrats win the White House.
That is Paul Bloomberg, senior reporter at HuffPost, where he covers campaign finance and elections. We're going to talk in a few minutes about the long lines that we saw last night in California and Texas. And we have a caller who said Bloomberg endorsed Bernie. I didn't mean to. It was a very long night. I didn't get much sleep. No, Bloomberg did not endorse Bernie. Bloomberg has endorsed Biden. Maybe it was the B in the B. But Bloomberg has dropped out, and he has endorsed Joe Biden and is expected to start an independent expenditure, according to CNN, and spend endless amounts of money to beat Trump. Let's take a couple calls, and then we'll talk about the long lines that we saw last night. Let's go to Oh, let's see. Raul in Daly City. Hi, Raul. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for letting me speak. I just wanted to point something out. I actually voted for Elizabeth Warren, so we'll disclose that. Joe Biden received hundreds of millions of dollars, more than Bloomberg spent, in political advertising through the mass media, who chanted daily, hourly, half-hourly, on multiple times through the hour. Bernie Sanders is probably not electable. Bernie Sanders cannot beat Trump. He'll be a socialist. Do you want a socialist? And we have to admit that the money that supports that mass media are commercial advertisers, corporations who did not want to see him win. This is not a slant or a slam on Joe Biden. This is how our elections are run. And this is one of the great problems. It almost goes back to Edward R. Murrow and his prophecy on how television could be misused or misabused. I think if you search through the tons of videos, YouTubes, whatever you want to go back and research, you're going to find that that was a constant theme. I do not remember hearing, and it probably happened, I will admit, at least once or twice, people should vote. Please, people, study the candidates, vote who you think would be the best choice and what would serve your needs the best. I very rarely ever heard that.
Well, thank you. And especially on broadcast media, it's been a very low information campaign. To your point, I'm just looking to trying to remind myself how much free media Donald Trump got. Okay, according to Open Secrets, he got about $6 billion in free media during the campaign. As you point out, just in South Carolina, according to Politico, Joe Biden got $100 million in free media. So he makes a good point, Paul, and I'm sure people are going to put out, in-depth studies looking at the media that Biden is getting from his win in South Carolina and from people coalescing behind him.
I mean, it's absolutely true that, you know, the media has a huge impact in perceptions in our politics. And oftentimes they try to underplay that and say that, you know, we're not, you know, making our decisions on what we cover isn't necessarily driving politics, but it does. There's no doubt about that. And a lot of cable news, the people that they have speaking on it, you know, are political consultants with their own points of view who are trying to drive a political agenda, who are guests, not necessarily the hosts. So, I mean, it's a totally valid point that this earned media is driven by the points of view of the people who are on these channels. And, you know, looking to create enough energy and excitement and sort of entertainment on the show that people tune in and watch the advertising as well.
Right, exactly. We have a tweet from Charles who said, an El Paso friend in her 30s on Beto O'Rourke's impact tonight. Many of us feel betrayed that our, quote, hip progressive leader is endorsing the establishment candidate. The older generation will simply vote for Biden because we have to trust that Beto knows what's best for El Paso. I think this is a really important question, is what if Biden is the candidate, will he be able to turn out the youth vote? Because the Sunrise Movement last night had some comments from Joe Biden, who basically said that millennials are just complaining. And the Sunrise Movement said exit polls in California show 72% of young voters for Sanders. Biden gets 5. Sunrise said there's no way to defeat Trump without record youth turnout. The Dems are planning their own funeral if they nominate Joe. I mean, things are changing by the hour, but this is a really important question, Paul. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's a real point and an interesting thing. I mean, what I've always seen in this campaign is that the biggest divide isn't, you know, by race or gender or, you know, even economic status, but by age. And that has always been the divide. I mean, it's sort of a little bit funny that the divide is by age between two candidates who are in their late 70s, and one of them is supported by people under 40 and one of them is supported by people over 40. But that's the dividing line. You know, there's a future of the Democratic Party that wants something different than what the Democratic Party has been offering for the past 40 years, and they tend to back Bernie Sanders. And then there's the rest of the people who are supporting, I guess, Joe Biden as the candidate now for the, for that, the long-term older Democratic voters who aren't looking for any kind of big change. Now, this goes back to the same problem for Bernie Sanders of not increasing the youth turnout in the primary. So if he's not doing that, then the argument sort of cuts against him there. And as for, you know, for Joe Biden, it looks like he is boosting turnout, or not necessarily he is boosting turnout, but rather the desire for a lot of, you know, ordinary Democratic voters to come out and vote for someone they think can beat Trump is driving them out. I mean, we saw Virginia turnout doubled from 2016. So, I mean, this is just like a giant turnout. And a lot of these arguments might be moot when looking at the fact that Democrats really just want to get rid of Donald Trump.
Right. Paul Blumenthal is a reporter with HuffPost. We're talking about last night's results. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. We're still waiting on California, where there are so many delegates at stake. And right now, Bernie Sanders, the AP has called California for Bernie Sanders, and they allocate, let's see, 30% of all delegates. He could still close the gap as California's results come in. Again, Joe Biden has 548 delegates. Bernie Sanders has 484. Elizabeth Warren has 53. And you need 1,991 to win the nomination. And again, the question is, will this be a contested convention? We don't know at this point. There are still a number of states that will vote in the coming weeks. Now I would like to welcome another guest to talk about the long lines that we saw last night. Kira Lerner is a reporter with The Appeal, and she has been closely following what happened in Texas and California. Hi, Kira. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So we saw long lines at places like UCLA. Students were in line for 3 hours. On social media, there was a video of a young voter in Texas who said he was in line for five hours. When I went to bed last night, I think it was 1 a.m. in Texas, and people were still in line. So there's different things happening. First off, tell us about all of the polling places that got shut down after the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, the polling places in Texas.
Right. Well, like you said, I saw story after story, people reporting their experiences on Twitter, on cable news, of waiting in lines for 5, 6, 7 hours to cast a ballot last night, especially in Houston and Los Angeles, as you mentioned. And a lot of people were pointing out that these people were very committed to voting if they're willing to stand in line for that long. But I think we have to remember that if people are forced to wait in line for that amount of time, it means that something is broken with our system, and this should not be happening. If you look at Texas, a recent report by the Leadership Conference Education Fund found that Texas has closed 750 of its polling places since 2012. That's the most of any state. An analysis by The Guardian found that most of those polling place closures were in neighborhoods that have growing Latino and Black populations. So we really see Texas has moved from allowing you to vote only in your local polling location to any voting center throughout the county, which does have its benefits. But in that move, it's really eliminated so many of its polling places, and we saw the effects of that yesterday.
Wow. And some people just didn't stay in line. I mean, some people did, but a lot of people did not. On Twitter, they said, "I'm leaving. This is ridiculous."
Right. For every story you see of someone who waited past midnight to cast a ballot, you have to imagine all of the people who have obligations, who have kids, who have things they had to get to. I saw one woman complaining that she has a bad back and just couldn't wait in line. So I think we have to remember that long lines really are a form of voter suppression.
Exactly. And some people said, why don't people just vote by mail to just take care of this voter suppression problem? You know, here in California, it's so easy. You get very good instructions. You get an I voted sticker. I took my mail-in ballot to a polling place, and it's just such a simple process. Do you know what vote by mail is like in Texas?
Yeah, well, vote by mail is different state by state. I think one thing that you do have to remember, though, is that in a highly contentious primary, when candidates are dropping out up until Election Day, there's a lot of people who do want to wait and vote on Election Day. They don't know what candidates are still going to be in the race, and they want their vote to count. So even if vote by mail is a valid option in Texas, I think there's just so much energy and enthusiasm for this Democratic primary that a lot of people wanted to be part of that on Election Day and showed up to vote on yesterday. We saw especially long lines on college campuses where voting is often kind of like
if you'd like to make a call, please hang up.
A communal activity you do with friends. And so, yeah, I think we really have to fix our system so that people are able to vote on Election Day.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. That is Kira Lerner. She's a reporter with The Appeal. And did Paul leave us? Okay. Paul Blumenthal had to jump off the line. So thanks for joining us, Paul. Paul is a senior reporter at HuffPost, and you can find his pieces at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. Today, we're talking about Super Tuesday results and the unacceptable long lines we saw last night in Texas and California. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we are going to do a show about the coronavirus. Los Angeles has just announced that they are in a state of emergency at this time. We're also going to talk about what is happening at the public health level, because National Nurses United put out a press release saying that the nation's hospitals are woefully unprepared. So we'll talk about what needs to change. And just the bigger question is, how serious is this? If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line. Your call at kalw.org. Today, we are talking about Super Tuesday results. We're also talking about the long lines that we saw in California and Texas. If you had any issues at the voting booth, at the polling place, we'd love to hear from you. And just what are your thoughts overall about last night's results? We're still waiting on California. Bernie Sanders has been declared the winner by the AP, but we still don't know how the delegates will be handed out. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Kira, just a couple more questions about these long lines. I mean, this clearly has to do with suppressing Black voters and Latinx voters, because as you said, 50 counties that gained the most Black and Latino residents in Texas between 2012 and 2018 closed 542 polling sites. So it's pretty clear what the end goal here is. I mean, what can be done about this? Lawsuits have been filed by the ACLU, but what else can be done?
Right. Well, you have to remember that this just fits into a larger playbook of voter suppression tactics that we've seen the GOP take on since the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act in 2013. Since that decision, states across the South have not had to run changes to their voting laws by the Department of Justice, and they've been able to get away with things like mass closures in polling places. I talked to Mary Moreno, who's the communications director for the Texas Organizing Project in Houston, and she was at some of these polling places that had hours-long lines, and she said they're considering all of their options. First, they're going to speak with their elected officials to see if anything can be done to open up more polling places ahead of the November election, which is no doubt going to be another high-turnout election. They also said that the possibility of litigation is an option if that's necessary, because the Texas Organizing Project is working to grow the electorate in Texas, and they have to make sure that the voting systems keep up with that electorate growth.
Well, we also saw long lines in California and UCLA, where it was predominantly students at this polling place, three-hour long lines. Have you been able to look into what happened there?
I think there's a lot of confusion about what happened. LA had rolled out a new election system, and I think there were faulty machines. There weren't enough voting machines. It looks like the LA Times is still kind of trying to figure out exactly what went on and why we saw such long lines, especially on college campuses. But I think the county is going to have to assess their election system ahead of November and see what can be done to fix this problem, because, like we've said, students especially have time constraints. If they have to get to class, I can imagine that they would leave the line and end up for going voting.
It also sends them a really bad message if this is their first election.
It does. And research shows that people are more likely to be lifetime voters if they start young. And so the more that we suppress votes from college students and other young people, the more likely it is that they'll decide not to vote in later elections. So it's so important that we make it easy for young people to vote.
Wow. Well, Kara, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Kara Lerner is a reporter at The Appeal. She has been following the long lines in Texas and California. And now I would like to welcome Ben Christopher to the show. Ben is a reporter at Cal Matters, where he covers California politics and elections. Hi, Ben. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So can you give us any insight about why we had so many long lines last night in California, especially at UCLA?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think people are still trying to figure out exactly what was happening. But, you know, it's important to note that this was a new election system for many counties, including LA County. And so I'm sure that's part of it. I know that the Secretary of State's office was doing quite a lot of outreach to counties across the state, warning them to prepare for what could potentially be a record high turnout. And so certainly the counties will be sort of they'll be answering questions along those lines. But at this point, I think a lot more questions than answers at this point.
Right. There are also a lot more. There's uncertainty around what's going on in California. The AP has called California for Bernie Sanders. We don't know how many delegates he's going to get yet. This is a lot of delegates. California allocates 30% of all delegates. So what's your read on it so far?
Yeah, well, I mean, as anyone who's familiar with following California elections in the past knows, it can take days, if not weeks, for the state to come up with a final tally of its election results. And this process is particularly complicated because delegates are allocated not just based on the statewide vote, but how things went in each congressional district. And so it's going to take probably weeks before we know exactly what happened in California. Certainly, Bernie Sanders did well. I mean, I don't think anyone expects him to lose his first place position in terms of the delegate count. But as for how well Joe Biden did and whether he'll be able to close that gap, we just don't know. I mean, between now and last night, another 1 million votes were counted. So we're getting a clearer picture, but we still might have millions of votes, maybe as many as 2 million votes to count. And so I think the question is, will those ballots that have yet to be counted, will they just kind of reaffirm the results we're seeing, or will they start to push things in one direction or another? And it's worth keeping in mind that the people whose ballots have yet to be counted are those who voted in person on Election Day, or who sent their ballot in the mail on Election Day, or people who, you know, changed their party registration on Election Day to get that conditional ballot. And traditionally, that block of voters is younger, it's more Latino, and so sort of by extension, it tends to be more liberal. And so, you know, typically what we see is the initial results favor Republicans a bit more than the final results, or at least conservative causes more than the final results. And so, you know, we might see a lot of Democratic voters. We also might see, you know, a lot of Democratic voters holding off to make their choice until South Carolina, which could be good news for Joe Biden in the presidential race. So, you know, I realize people are really eager to know exactly what happened, and this is probably not a very satisfying answer, but we'll just have to wait and see.
And is there any sense of when we might have answers? Are we talking hours? Are we talking weeks?
I would say we are talking days and weeks, not hours.
Okay.
So on Thursday, the counties will provide their first assessment of how many ballots are yet to be counted, and then we'll sort of know exactly what we don't know. But, you know, if we remember for 2018, there were some, really high-profile congressional races that were initially, you had some people even calling it for the Republican candidates, and then day after day, the results started shrinking and shrinking and shrinking until in some cases the results actually flipped. And so, you know, we might see a lot of movement between now and, say, next week.
Well, we can say for certain, I think, I mean, the LA Times headline right now is Latino wave put Bernie on top in California.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the fact is that if you look nationwide, Joe Biden did quite well, I think better than expected. And I think the exception, the bit of good news for Bernie Sanders is California. And I think that is largely has to do with the demographics here. As a state, we have a very large Latino population. I think there was a big question of whether Latinos would turn out in the numbers that Sanders clearly needed them to. And it looks, you know, promising at this point. But again, we still don't know exactly what that final outcome is going to be.
Ben Christopher is a reporter at Cal Matters, where he covers California politics and elections. Today, we're talking about last night's results. We're still waiting on California. And if you have any questions, comments, thoughts about where we are right now, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Again, Michael Bloomberg dropped out this morning after spending an unprecedented $660 million. He has endorsed Joe Biden. Elizabeth Warren came in third in her own state of Massachusetts, and she says she is still in the race. So let's take a few callers. Let's go to Vicky in San Francisco. Hi, Vicky. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I am not a young voter. I am 68 years old, and I think, and this scares the bejesus out of me, that if Biden gets the nomination, he may unite a lot of centrist Democrats, but Trump is going to eat him for breakfast. Absolutely eat him for breakfast. And what we needed in order to beat Trump was somebody who could stand up on the debate stage and effectively counter him. And Biden is too weak and too confused to do that. So I'm afraid Biden is just going to give Trump lots of media opportunities, and that the Democratic Party, by making this big push to get everyone behind Biden, and the mainstream media by talking about Bernie's a socialist, that this has walked the Democrats right into a great big trap, and I'm worried.
Well, Vicky, thank you for your call. We've got another caller who has a related comment, so let's take Greg in Palo Alto, and then we'll get a comment. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, hello. I couldn't agree more with your previous caller. I'll tell you what. Biden's got a snowball's chance in hell of beating Trump, and I'll tell you why. Hunter Biden is going to be his running mate in the election. If you think that what happened during the impeachment was strange, wait until Trump and Biden, fight it out over Hunter Biden and what happened in Ukraine, because that's going to be central for these people, the Trump people coming up. But I just wanted to make a couple of other comments. One is, after last night, I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. It's depressing. I mean, totally depressing. I had no idea that black people, even Latinos and young people would do, I mean, the way that would be handled. I never thought that young people were going to push Bernie into the nomination. I just didn't feel that way. You could look at New Hampshire, the breakdown. It didn't seem like there were just, you know, droves of young people going to the polls. And the system isn't set up to be democratic. I mean, people have touched on that earlier. So I just don't see how this is going to work. And I think that anybody who looks at Biden's record, especially black people, I mean, I can't understand why they would vote for him. Lastly, I heard Alicia Garza talking about why she thought Biden might have taken the black vote in the country. One, she said he's familiar. He's also associated with Obama, and that there are results. Well, you can look at all three of those things, and you wonder, what is she thinking about? Because Biden's record on race, as I've said more times than I believe on your show, is ridiculous. And two, what results? His record is just atrocious. So I can't understand. Sanders was the only one who I think had a chance to beat Trump.
Well, Greg, you brought up a lot of things there. And, you know, I just want to say, last night on Twitter, a lot of people were very offended. A lot of black voters were really offended because people said these are low information voters. Why would they vote for Biden? So let's not go there, because a lot of people have very different reasons why they vote, right? And I would say on Democracy Now! This morning, they had a good conversation about black voters and why they voted the way they did. And there was a Bernie supporter. There were people with other views. So listen to that. And we'll also put a panel discussion together about that, because it's really important. I won't ask you to comment on that, Ben, because I know that you're focused on California. But I do want to bring up what Vicky said and Greg also said about Biden and Trump. And when I saw that Biden was doing so well and the thought of him winning the nomination, I was thinking back about how Donald Trump, and I never thought I would see a Republican do this. I mean, he eviscerated Jeb Bush over George W. Bush's support for the invasion of Iraq. I just never thought I would see something like that. Joe Biden voted for the Iraq invasion. Trump could do the same thing to him. And then Hillary Clinton really didn't have an answer on NAFTA and trade issues. And Biden also voted for NAFTA. So, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen yet, but a lot of people are raising these questions now.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, so much of the debate throughout this Democratic primary season has been about this question of electability, who is more electable. And I'm just not sure we actually know what that means in 2020. I mean, certainly Bernie Sanders has his share of vulnerabilities. We are yet to see sort of whether the socialist label turns off some of the moderate suburban voters who Democrats really relied on in 2018 in the blue wave. But on the other hand, as your callers pointed out, Biden has his share of vulnerabilities. And so I think it's just not clear.
Yeah, I mean, the drone issue is huge. And I mean, Trump is a master at spinning things. And the media, I mean, look at the Hillary email story that was on the front of the New York Times. There were so many articles about that. And Vicky's point about Hunter Biden, I think, is also a good one. Here's a piece from Reuters just 2 days ago. U.S. Republican seeks first subpoena in Hunter Biden probe. And Vanity Fair has a piece called Republicans Are Suddenly Interested in Hunter Biden Again, and I still haven't really heard Joe Biden give a good answer about the work that his son did in Ukraine. I mean, I'm sure other people have, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I mean, say what you will about President Trump, but he is supremely good at finding an issue of vulnerability and just picking at it and picking at it and picking at it. And I think that's going to be the case of whoever the candidate is.
Right.
Unclear how much the Hunter Biden Ukraine affair will stick to Biden in particular. But certainly, as we saw in 2016, the emails, you know, the whole email gate and the way that was covered, that certainly muddied the waters for a lot of voters who just felt like, well, there was just a sense that there was something untoward going on there, even if they didn't know the details. And so, you could certainly see that happen in 2020 again.
Right. Well, we have a tweet from Chase who says, to me, the issue of Biden versus Sanders is who can work with the other side to get things done. People over 40 might want the dramatic change that Sanders espouses, but do not think he's able to unify and negotiate to get things done. Democrats have two struggles, a lot of great candidates and a lot of nerves on who will beat Trump. In the end, both these things put us at an advantage over the Republicans. Well, thank you for that comment. You can tweet us at Your Call Radio. You can also call 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's go next to Deborah in San Francisco. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks, Rose. I love your show.
Thank you.
The comment I had was related to kind of an after-voting angst that occurred and made me think multiple ways about the fact that I voted in person in City Hall, and I sat down at a booth, picked up a pen that was offered, marked my ballot, and after I left, I thought, you know, this is very early days in the COVID-19 terror, if you will, and spread, and there are, of course, cases popping up all over the place, not only in this Northern California area, but also other parts of the country. And I think a factor that crossed my mind that, you know, if somebody sat down before me who was a super spreader or somebody was, out waiting and, you know, incubating COVID-19, this could affect not only me, but a lot of other people. And I don't know if anybody has actually projected into showing up at voting booths and the idea of the spreading of COVID-19, but by November, there's probably going to be quite a few more people in this country who are actively exposed to the virus. And you know, I hate to say this, but the Republicans are very fear-oriented. Actually, we all are. But, you know, the idea of a pandemic impacting the voting could be something that, you know, people need to think about.
Well, that's just such an awful thought. But I think you make a good point. I heard one scientist on, I think it was a show on KQED, say, right now the virus, in once summer hits, it'll be somewhat dormant. But then once fall comes, it could really take off. We're going to actually ask these questions on tomorrow's show because there's so many unanswered questions about what this means and how serious it is and what could happen this year. So I'll definitely bring that up with our guest tomorrow, Deborah. Thank you for calling. We have an email from Steve who says, I completely agree with your last callers. Trump will destroy Biden in head-to-head debates. This is why I supported Warren, as sadly as events have transpired for her. As usual, the DNC is protecting itself at the cost of the presidency. Well, thank you for that, Steve. A lot of people are wondering what is going to happen. You know, Ben, there were actually, I read an article about how Trump might not even debate and just say it's fake news, I don't trust these moderators, that he has nothing to gain from debating. I mean, there's so much that happens with him that's unprecedented. Anything is possible.
Yes, well, that's certainly true. Anything is possible. You know, as sort of a related point, I think one of the interesting implications of the results last night is that, you know, Joe Biden did quite well in a number of states where he had virtually no ground game. And so I think a lot of, you know, just talking about sort of anything is possible and sort of maybe the traditional rules of electoral politics don't hold anymore, I do kind of wonder to what extent these primaries are so closely followed at sort of the national level, this sort of retail focus, and maybe the way that sort of traditional appeals are made to voters, maybe that just doesn't really hold anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's right. On some of the shows, they said that Biden barely had a ground game in any of these states, and a lot of them were huge upsets to Bernie Sanders. And Massachusetts was an upset to Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, that's right. Coming in third, that's pretty dispiriting. It's got to be pretty dispiriting if you're on the Warren team.
Right. What else can you tell us about California? $19 million poured into Super Tuesday here in California. The largest spender is the oil and gas industry. They poured about $4 million into legislative races. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so that was a tally I came up with looking at independent expenditure. So these are super PACs, the groups that spend sort of on behalf of or against a candidate, but not, you know, legally not coordinating with the candidacy. And so you saw a ton of money pouring into a handful of contested legislative races as you had business interests, particularly, as you said, the oil and gas industry, sort of squaring off with organized labor, trying to make sure that their brand of Democrat sort of made it into the top two. And you know, again, it's way too early to make any broad statements about what happened because there are still going to be lots of results coming in, especially in Los Angeles. But it does appear that it was sort of a tough night for the oil and gas industry. They poured a ton of money into four legislative candidates, or behind four legislative candidates in particular, in Los Angeles, two in the Bay Area, one in the Central Valley, and it looks like only one of them, Carlos Villapadua, seems on track to make it into the top two. Again, very early, so I don't want to give the wrong impression that this is final, but it does seem that perhaps money only gets you so far in politics. And certainly we saw that with Mike Bloomberg, who poured something like $500 million into this race and doesn't have much to show for it. So.
Well, let's take one more caller. Let's go to Ed in San Francisco. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Okay, I guess what I don't want to see is what happened in 2016 when I consider myself a progressive Democrat, but a lot of my brethren and sisters decided they weren't going to vote at all because Hillary wasn't good enough for them. She wasn't pure enough for them. So that's what I do not want to see this time. Most people don't like Trump. Most people don't like his policies. Most people want to get better education. They want to get medical care. You just get these people together and get them out and vote, and you'll stomp Trump. I don't care what he looks like in in a debate.
Mm. Well, thank you. I mean, it's the voter turnout in San Francisco even last night was only 28%, I mean, which is a really sad number. What are your thoughts on this, Ben? I think what's so interesting about 2016 is you had a lot of people stay home, as Ed said, and then you had a lot of union Obama voters voting for Trump. And people said, when you're talking about Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania this time around, you got to get those union Obama voters to the Democratic nominee, not to vote for Trump again. And when we're talking about the Electoral College, like it did last time, it could come down to 70,000 votes.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think as we see this race sort of narrow down to a two-person race between Biden and Sanders, there's going to be a growing debate over which candidate is most likely to leave people disappointed and not voting. And mm-hmm. so you'll see the Biden folks say, oh, well, if we elect Sanders, you're going to have a lot of the sort of moderates who made up the base of the 2018 congressional blue wave. They're going to stay home, or they might even vote for Trump. And then likewise, you're going to see the Sanders people say, oh, well, if we vote for Biden, you're going to turn off all the youth and Latino voters and voters who maybe are turned off by Biden's record on trade or the Iraq war. And it might just be too early to say that, I think, at this point. I mean, certainly if you look at exit polls, Biden did quite well in sort of turning out some voters who did not participate in the 2016 primary. That's based on the exit polls, which, again, are preliminary. But again, not to be a very unsatisfying broken record, but we'll just have to wait and see, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so much is changing, so we'll have to wait and see. But Ben, thank you for your reporting and thank you for joining us.
Of course, thank you.
Ben Christopher is a reporter at Cal Matters, where he covers California politics and elections. And on Friday, we will talk extensively about the media coverage around this primary. So if there's anything you want us to discuss, or if there are any stories that you see that really do a good job of looking at that, please email us yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show, Jonathan Linden for line producing, and Joanne Marr, our studio engineer. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.